We just finished up stocks, and we had our second exam on stocks, and now we're ready to work on bonds. Boring bonds, dodgy bonds, reliable bonds. Did you see last week that Rite Aid? You ever hear wrong? I call it Wrong Aid. Rite Aid. You hear about Rite Aid? Well, I have a friend. My wife and I are friends. Pass that one back to her. Our friends with a couple who live back in Pennsylvania now. He worked for Rite Aid for several years, and he was an executive. And he's very funny. I can't believe we're still in business. And this was years ago. And so what they did is they had a reverse split.
Huh?
We talked about splits where you might have 100 shares and then they have a 2-for-1 split. Now you have 200 shares. What happens to the price? It goes in half, right? Well, they had a 1-for-20 split.
Huh?
If you had, say, 100 shares, now you have 5. Went down by, why? Why did they do that? Well, what happened to the price? In fact, let's take a look. Let's take a look at Wrong Aid. Exactly. If the price drops in half, what happened to the price when they gave you 1 share for every 20? Right. Well, why did they do that? Well, let's go look at Rite Aid. And the symbol is right, right? R-I-D. Rad. There it is. Rite Aid. Right. Rad. It's based in mid-Pennsylvania. Look at the price. 47 cents. When that happens, the New York Stock Exchange, see, they're still in the New York Stock, oh, now they're on the, no, no, they're in the, still in the New York Stock Exchange. New York Stock Exchange says, no. You can't be on our exchange if your price is under a dollar. I mean, they're a penny stock. So they're doing a 1-for-20 split, which will take away, you know, if you have 100 shares, you'll not have 5. But the price will go up 20-fold so that it'll be look like a respectable company. But look, 200, 500, it's just big. They're probably going, and you know what? I don't know about you, but on a Saturday night, the Rite Aid in Ocean Beach is the place to be. I mean, you just see the more strangest assortment of people there. But let's take a look at some of their competitors, like what's Walgreens? Here it is, WBA Boots. $49 billion. And then CVS, right, CVS. $69 billion. So we're probably going to see the end of Rite Aid. We'll see. But that was 20 years ago, he said. I can't believe we're still in business. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with them. And are you following the Lyft? Lyft, the IPO? Okay, let's take a look at... Started off around 80. It's down to 57. What do we say about IPOs, initial public offerings? Are we interested in those generally? In my humble opinion, no. Stay away from the darn things because, for the most part, there's a saying in the industry. IPO stands for it's probably overpriced. Okay, so we got Denise. And... Oh, poop. You ever have one of those decades? Andrea. Andrea's not here. We have Denise Martinez, and we have Azucena, and did I give you yours? Yeah? Yeah. I know. Okay, then that's Giovanna. Right. Giovanna, last name Giovanna? Okay. Yeah, so you didn't put your last name on there. Okay. And who's got the spreadsheet? Anybody got the spreadsheet? I'll pass it back this way. So, you did put your last name on there. And then Denise, and that's what's going on. Okay. So Uber's going to go public soon. A bunch of others are going to go public. So in my humble opinion, they're not for the vast majority of us. Although if you're, yes?
Yeah.
Do you think we should switch to Airbus instead of...
Oh, right! Let's take a look at, right? We didn't take a look. Let's take a look at our portfolio. Let's take a look at our portfolio. Which one do we want? We want to... Yeah. So we got Boeing, which hasn't actually done badly. And somebody said before the class started, we should sell our marijuana stock. Because look, we're up 16%. What a class. What? No class has ever done this. That's mostly because of PG&E. But okay. So somebody had a motion to sell the Canopy Growth, the marijuana stock. One. Who wants to sell? Canopy Growth. Wait, raise your hands high. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Who wants to hold? One, two, three, four. Only four. Some of you didn't vote. Okay. We're going to sell Canopy?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. It's just, I'm going to write this down because I'll forget. So we're going to sell Canopy. What do we want to buy? What do we want to buy? Anything? We'll just put it in cash. We'll buy more PG&E. No, we need to be diversified. What do you want to buy?
Vail Resorts.
Who?
Vail Resorts.
Vail Resorts. I've heard of them. I mean, I went falling once. I'm sorry, skiing once. And believe it or not, and it was at Vail. It's a long story how I wound up there. It's not showing up. Vail Resorts. Mountain. Ah, cute. What a great symbol. What a great... Okay, so let's see. They're selling for $2.16, and the P.E. ratio is quite, you know, healthy. They're a mid-cap stock, $8.7 billion, paying over 3%. And the Yahoo analysts are fairly positive. Let's put that on the agenda. Let's do by the end of the class, okay? We'll do this cash flow. Oh, we gotta go run and get the value line. We'll do that later. Okay. All right. Anything else? Now back to our. Somebody else wanted to sell Boeing. Anybody want to sell Boeing? How many people want to sell Boeing? One. Only one. Oh. Yeah, you want to stick with them? They're going to fix this. So they're going to fix the problem. They obviously see there's some kind of problem. They're going to fix it. It's not the end of the world. For some people, it was. But the car crashes kill a whole lot more people than plane crashes. But do they put on the national news when somebody gets in a car crash and dies? No. If it's a plane, though, the whole world takes notice. All right. Are you going to stick around after class? Okay, good. Are you going to take the exam now? After class? Or do you want to take it right now? After class. Okay, because we have class in here. After you, right? Okay, good. All right, so let's get started on bonds. Okay. Well, I don't know if you remember or know who Andrew Carnegie is, Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Mellon University, but he was a big steel magnate in the Gilded Age, and he said this long before the movie, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. He said this long time before that, gentlemen prefer bonds. Right, so that's cute, and then they stole it, and you, the gentlemen prefer blondes. Okay, so what are bonds? Well, we've already, you know, we've talked about these things when we were discussing the alternatives, and then when we looked at a mutual fund, they're essentially loans. You are playing the part of the bank. You lend your money to a corporation, corporate bond, a state and local government, municipal bonds, or the granddaddy of them all, the Treasury, and they promise to pay you interest over a specified period of time and then repay the amount of principal at maturity. So investors who buy bonds are loaners, whereas when you invest in the stock, you're part owner. So, do you want to be a bank? when you grow up, you'd love to be a bank because you're going to get a whole lot more interest than you get from a bond. But still, the idea is I'm going to take my money and lend it to somebody. So how does it work? Well, just as when you create a mortgage document, when you go get a mortgage or your credit card document, then everybody reads the whole thing, right? Click here to say that you've read the whole thing. You read the whole thing, right? There's a trust indenture. There's a mortgage document for bonds called the indenture. That sets forth the terms between the issuer and the bondholders, describes your rights, and appoints a trustee. A trustee, and this gets into law, but a trustee is somebody who's watching over the account. It's usually a commercial bank or a trust company. That's their job. And it stipulates various what are called covenants, obligations of the bond issuer, what they're going to do. For example, when we built that stadium out there, do you think we had a bake sale for that? Yeah? No. We had to issue bonds. And part of the indenture says that the money that we raise must go for capital improvements, as they're called. We can't have a party and give ourselves a raise. It doesn't work that way. And so there's a trustee watching over us to make sure that we did that. Why do you invest in bonds? Well, investors receive their interest. Most people pay their credit card bills, their mortgages, their car payments? Yeah, no, they do. I mean, there's always situations like a recession where people en masse are defaulting, but no. And the same thing is true for bond issuers. In general, you know you're going to get your money back. You're going to get paid interest typically every 6 months. Now, there's a few bonds that pay quarterly, some pay monthly, but we're not going to deal with them. We're always going to say 6 months. Our bonds, all the bonds in here, just for simplicity, are going to pay every 6 months. And then the principal is returned when the bond is redeemed, anywhere from 1, 30, or more years. Now, there's a potential for capital gain or a capital loss. Huh? What? You mean I buy a bond for a certain amount. We'll always use $1,000. Most bonds come in $1,000 increments. And then I could sell it for more? Or I could sell it for less than $1,000? How does that work? Well, it has to do with interest rates. And we'll discuss this in detail because this is the trickiest part about bonds. But some bonds offer tax advantages, specifically muni bonds, and then some bonds are convertible. Doesn't that sound exciting? A convertible bond, like a convertible car? No, they're not that exciting. And we'll discuss those in detail when we get to hybrid securities. Bondholders are first in line for repayment if there's a default. So remember stockholders? Where are stockholders? Way at the end of the line. So when a company or a municipality goes bankrupt, then what happens is the bondholders are front and center. Now, they have to pay any taxes, which is usually no taxes due, and payroll. They have to pay the employees first. But the bondholders get to the front of the line, and they pick over the carcass, right? And they might get, 90 cents in the dollar or 50 cents in the dollar. Whatever they get, though, is there anything left for the stockholders? No. That's why when a company goes bankrupt, you see the price of the stock go to 5 cents or whatever. And so that's why we say, stocks are far riskier than bonds. Bonds are far less volatile, but they still fluctuate. Oh, relax. We're going to discuss this. It has to do with interest rates. What has been our average return over decades? Well, I'm sticking with 4 to 8%, even though I really should lower them. We really should lower them. Because right now they're paying, 2 to 5%. But you can think of them like mortgages. And over the last 80 years, mortgages have paid 6, 7%. And bonds have paid anywhere from 4 to 8%. Of course, the more riskier the bonds, they're going to pay a higher interest rate. The less risk you're going to pay a lower interest rate. Currently, as I just said, many bonds are paying far less than their historical returns. And a few are paying more, but not too many. Now, here finally, we're going to discuss this trickiest part about bonds. And if you just remember the seesaw, This is the best way to remember it, in my humble opinion. If interest rates fall, bond prices will rise. If interest rates rise, bond prices will fall. Think of the seesaw, because that is a very good analogy. It's an inverse relationship. You know, yes?
Don't you have to think about inflation too?
Well, inflation is there in the background, right? And it's often what's causing interest rates to rise and fall. But when you're a bondholder, inflation is one of your worst nightmares. It's a nightmare for everybody. But if you're a bond investor, you've lent your money out at a certain rate, and you're getting paid back that interest rate, and then eventually they pay you back your principal. But if inflation is raging, you're getting paid back in dollars that are worth less. So you have to keep that in mind all the time. And we really should keep that in mind when we're investing in stocks too. I mean, we're always trying to stay ahead. In my humble opinion, stay ahead of inflation. You know, you hear people, I got $500,000 in the bank, paying 1% or what? Maybe it's paying better. They maybe better rate. But if inflation is at 2%, what's happening to their investment? Even though it looks like it's going up, it's actually shrinking in buying power. Okay, so who snuck in? Aram and who else? Anybody else? Okay, good. Okay. So, you need a chapter 9. So, did I answer your question? I think I did. Yeah. Okay. So please remember this, and we're gonna hammer this away, because I'm gonna ask you several times. This is the trickiest part of bond investing. Okay, over the long term, stocks have outperformed bonds. So why would you invest in bonds if you're a long-term investor? Well, stocks are more volatile, they carry more risk. Bonds offer an element of stability. Some people use the term ballast. Any sailors in here? Any salespeople? Did you get one? Did I give you yours? That's it. You're Andrea. Right. Okay. Another person used the term, which I thought was pretty cool. They said, think of them like an airbag. Right? When there's a crash, you have bonds, your airbag goes off. For some investors, stocks are simply too risky. They reason, if I can obtain my long-term goals without taking on the risk of being invested in stocks, so be it. I can sleep better at night. And, you know, bonds also make good intermediate-term investments, 2, 3, 4 years, whereas you think of a stock, 5, 10, 20 years. And then sometimes, not now in my humble opinion, but sometimes bonds are just screaming good deals, as we'll see when we took a look at what happened during the Great Recession. So, what are the risks? Interest rate risks, the seesaw. If your interest rates go up, what's going to happen to your bond price? Your bond price is going to go down. Purchasing, this is what Marco is referring to. If your bond interest is being outstripped by inflation, you're actually losing value. Your investment is not doing as well. And then there's the risk of default risks. It's much less of a risk with munis and treasury bonds. The treasury, I don't care what anybody says, the United States Treasury is not going bankrupt. Will pay its right. It will pay its debts, won't it? I mean, it's not going to go, is it? But corporations do go bust, and some municipalities go bust too. But that's very rare. Happened a few times during the Great Recession. Detroit, Stockton, and San Bernardino all went through bankruptcy, but they all came out. Okay, what about liquidity risk? Well, this can be a problem with thinly traded bonds, because it turns out that bonds don't trade as often as stocks. Stocks are trading all the time, and it's easy to find a good quote and see what's going on. Whereas people, especially investors who concentrate on bonds, they tend to hold their bonds. They buy the bond, and then they tend to hold it for the long term, collect the interest, and then get the money back. So sometimes you might not be able to sell your bonds. especially as we're going to see when you see the minimums that they want you to come up with, $25,000 minimum, $100,000. And then we'll discuss what's called a call, the risk of your bond being called away from you. If you have a mortgage now, if you have a homeowner, and you have a mortgage of 6%, you need to run down to your credit union, your bank, a mortgage broker, and look into refinancing. And the same thing is true for bond issuers, corporations, municipalities. The Treasury's never issued callable bonds. They just simply just say, well, this is what we're going to pay, and that's it. But they would want to say, okay, look. You know, we're paying you 6%, but we're going to call the bond away from you. Here's your money back. But now we're going to reissue these bonds at 4% because that's what the going rate is. So that's called call risk. And as we said, some bonds are non-callable. We'll discuss the call feature in a bit. Now, here's... This is our industry. My apologies, but the industry uses the term nominal rate, which is the more proper term, or you'll sometimes see nominal yield, or coupon rate, or coupon yield. What the hell are they talking about? Well, this is the named rate. This is the rate that the bond pays, and it will always pay that. There's a few called floaters that change. But no, we'll not deal with those. We buy a bond, 6%, it will always pay 6%. So that's called the nominal rate, and it's called the coupon rate. Now, where did the term coupon come from? It's an anachronism. You know what anachronism means? Oh, we didn't do a joke. This is bad. We didn't do a joke. Kathleen? I got one from one of the other students. You want to hear it? Yeah, okay. So, did you hear about two guys that stole a calendar? They each got 6 months. I know, John. Well, this is the student joke, but she didn't want to tell it to the rest of the class. She just told it to me. Okay, the term coupon rate came from the fact that bonds used to have coupons. It's literally, they had coupons attached to them. And this was before the internet, before electronics. When the interest was due, the investor was required to clip the coupon, write their name and address on it, send in the coupons, and the company or the municipality would send them back a check. These things have become, they're long gone, but these things have become actually collector's items. So here, you can, these are, I don't know where they are, but you can buy these. They're the coupons. You clip a coupon and boom, send it in, and they send you back your money. What do you think of that, huh? Coupon, would you want to clip your coupons? Well, to this day, earning interest from a bond is often called clipping the coupon, even though all transactions are done electronically. The principal is almost always 1,000. Some bonds are 5,000, some are 10,000. But in this class, we will always use 1,000. It's also called par, which means equal, right? Or face value. So par value or face value. And bonds are denominated, as we said, in $1,000 increments, although some are 5, 10. We will ignore those. We will always use 1,000. So putting the coupon rate, the nominal yield, and the principal together tells you how much interest you will receive every year. And this makes it really actually very simple. If you have a 7% bond, principal, $1,000, how much interest are you going to get? $70. If it's a 3% bond, how much interest are you going to get? Everyone say 30. Wait till I ask you. If it's a 3% bond, it's $1,000, 3%? 30. So, but you don't actually get $30. You get 15 every 6 months. They pay you every 6 months. That's a little tricky. But since almost all bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments, and that's what we will always use 1,000, you now know that you're going to get 6%, $60. 5%, $50. It's that easy to remember, I think. I think it's a good way to remember. Plus, we're going to do problems, and it's going to ask you how much interest does it pay, and people will put 5 cents. No, not 5 cents. That would be a dollar bond. $50 or 7 cents. $70 if it's 7 cents. So remember that. The maturity date is the date on which the bond matures and the principal must be repaid. Most bonds are what we call term bonds. They mature all at once. So they issue 20-year bonds. All of them after 20 years, you get your $1,000 per bond back. Although some are serial. Now, what does that mean? We're going to issue these 20-year bonds, but some of them are going to mature in 5, in 10, in 15 years. So that allows them to pay back the bond over time. So we're used to, when we have a loan, a car loan or a mortgage, some of what we pay is interest, and some of what we pay is principal. That's what we're used to, right? It's not the way bonds work. They just pay you the interest, and then at the very end, boom, they pay you back the principal. And so the way to do this, the way to get some of the principal gone every so often is to have these serial bonds. And so they'll pay some, you know, 5 years. Sometimes it's every year. But usually it's 5, 10, 15 years. And so you can determine which bonds you're interested in when you want your money back. Now, I hate this. Technically, anything that goes from 2 years to 10 years, or is it 1 year to 10 years? Yeah, 2 years to 10 years, is a note. Bonds are greater than 10 years. But most people, including myself, will refer to all of them as bonds. But if you get somebody who's really a stickler for terminology, they're going to say, oh, no, that's the 5-year note, not the 5-year bond. In which case you say, that's what I would say if they do that to you. But this, it is true. So you'll hear people talk about the 10-year bond, and then somebody might say, no, it's actually the 10-year note. Oh, screw you. Okay. Okay, the call provision. We discussed this in a bit. A bit ago. Call, when we call in our bonds, we are the issuer. We're not the investor. This allows the issuer to retire, prepay, call in the bonds prior to the maturity date. Just like a homeowner would want to refinance their mortgage or a car owner gets a better deal on the loan, the bond issuer is going to want to pay fewer dollars in interest. So they would call in the bond. And you're, as a bond holder, you have no choice. I mean, they're going to pay you back your interest, and it's part of the deal. Sometimes there's a penalty. We'll discuss that later on. Sometimes there's a little, okay, you're going to pay me back. You're not going to pay me back $1,000. You have to pay me back $1,030. So there. And all their factors equal, investors would rather have non-callable bonds because they can't be called away. So that's a cool thing for them. Okay, so now, what are the call provisions? Freely callable, which means they can call it at any time. Non-callable, which means they can't call them. And then what is typical is there's some deferred period, deferred call. They'll say, okay, look, we're going to wait 10 years. The call protection period, the call deferment period. We will not call these away for another 5-10 years, and we'll see some examples of that. Most corporate, most muni bonds are freely callable or typically have this deferred call period. The Treasury has never issued callable bonds. So they are always non-callable. It doesn't mean they won't in the future, but they haven't done that. Which is the least desirable, obviously, for investors, freely callable. Most desirable is non-callable, and deferred gives you, some protection for amount, minimum time. And sometimes you'll get a loan. It's not often, but there'll be a period where you can't pay it back. You just can't. You have to wait 3 years and then you can pay it back, or they're going to penalize you. So what's the call premium? That's the amount that they add to the bond's par value when the bond is called. So if they have a $30 or $85 premium, it's like the prepayment penalty we discussed. The call price then becomes whatever the par is. In this case, always $1,000, even though some bonds are $5,000 and $10,000. Always $1,000, and then the extra premium. And then that's what they have to pay the $1,000 plus the premium. If there is no call premium, what you'll hear people say is, oh, this bond is callable at par, which means they can pay you back your $1,000 and thank you very much. Am I going too fast? No? Okay, good. Now, premium bond. Discount bond. Here comes the tricky part. We say that bonds always have a face value, a par value of 1,000. Some 5, 10, but in this class, always 1,000. You can see bonds that sell for more than 1,000. And you see bonds that are selling less than 1,000. Well, what's going on here? In this case, if it's a premium bond, interest rates have fallen. The bond price has gone up. If it's a discount bond, interest rates have gone up. The other side of the seesaw. And bond prices have gone down. Or the investment community is worried that that bond issuer is about to go into default. Or their long-term prospects are not good. So what they would do is they'd say, you know what? I think this company's going to go under. I'm going to start selling the bonds. Does it make sense? I'm just going to start selling them. I don't care what price I get. If I don't get 1,000, that's fine. Get rid of these bonds. I don't want to be stuck holding the bag if the company goes through bankruptcy. With me, understand? Okay. So wait a minute. It's tricky. It gets people all the time. Why would a bond sell at a premium or a discount to its par value? If the loan is for $1,000, wouldn't it always sell for $1,000, right? Because that's what you're going to get back when the bond matures. You're going to get $1,000 back. No. The interest rate on your bond does not change. That's why we call bonds fixed. We know how much money we're going to get. The price of the bond changes. That's not fixed. To reflect the change in prevailing interest rates within the financial community. So you have a bond that's paying 7%. And now interest rates fall to 3%. You're getting $70 a year. What are new bonds paying? 3% bond? Everyone should say 30. Wait, that's it. Yeah, how much does a 3% bond pay? 30. Would you sell your 7% bond for $1,000? No. Hell no. You're going to want a premium. You're going to expect a premium. Now, you don't have to sell it. You can if you want, but you don't have to. You can hang on to it and collect your coupon, clip your coupon. But if you wanted to sell it, you would demand a premium. Now, you bought a bond for 5%. 5 years later, interest rates are now 10%. Is anybody going to want to buy your 5% bond for $1,000? No, they can, for $1,000, they can get 10%, twice as much income. They're going to want you to accept a much lower price. You're going to have to pay a discount. Make sense? It drives people nuts. It drives people crazy. But if you just remember the image of the seesaw, it will do well. So here's a bond paying 10%. Remember, we will always use a face value of $1,000, so we're going to get $100 every year, actually $50 every 6 months. Interest rates fall to 8%. Now, your bond is paying far more than what new bonds are paying. They'd have to pay $1,250 to get the same amount of interest, so your bond is now worth more. If you were to sell it, you'd get a capital gain. Now, you don't have to sell it. You can still hang on to it. Clip your coupon. The same thing is true when interest rates rise. If you got that 10% bond paying $100, interest rates rise to 12%, now you need only $833 to get that same amount of interest. So investors are going to ask you, if you want to sell your bonds, they're going to say, okay, you have to pay us less. You'd have a capital gain loss if it's sold, but you don't have to sell it. You do not have to sell it. Just because interest rates have risen, you can still collect your coupons, collect your interest, and then get your $1,000 back. The amount of premium or discount is not only related to the amount of the fall or rise of the interest rates. In general, the greater the fall or rise in interest rates, the greater the premium or discount. But it also has to do with maturity. If you think of the seesaw, remember when you were playing on the seesaw? When you jumped on this part of the seesaw, and your buddy was right there, and then you jumped off. What happened to him? Whoa! But if you jumped into the middle, did you ever play in the middle of the seesaw? It was my favorite place. You know. And the seesaw is going up and down. What are you doing? You're just going to go, ooh. And that's the same idea. And that's why I went back and we were discussing long-term bond funds, mutual funds, versus short-term bond funds. Because a long-term bond fund, if the interest rates fall precipitously, it's going to go way up. Same thing is true when the interest rates rise. It's going to go farther down. But shorter-term bonds start to look like treasury bills and corporate paper because there's only 6 months left. I mean, what difference is it going to do to us, to our bond fund, to our bond value? Does that make sense? Think of the seesaw. Think of how about you tried to get your buddy, you were down at the bottom, and then your buddy's way up there, and you jump up, and he goes, wah! Oh, a lot of guys got, woo! We were cruel to one another. Okay, so how are we doing? All right, so here's an example. I don't really like this graph. It's from your book. I would have done it the other way around. I would have put zero over here. But the same thing is, it's showing the same idea. The farther out you are in terms of when you're going to get your money back, you're going to be more hit by interest rate swings, rises and falls, than as you get closer and closer to the day it matures. Okay, in general, long-term bonds exhibit greater price volatility and a greater opportunity for capital gains or losses. Intermediate-term bonds, short-term bonds, will exhibit lesser price volatility and a lesser opportunity for capital gains or losses. And as we said, bonds very close to maturity start to act like treasury bills, corporate paper, money markets. If you intend to keep your bond, you're buying the bond for the interest, you're going to take the principal back, do you care? The answer is no. You don't care because interest rates going up and down are not going to affect you. Your bond is fixed. If you need to sell, you'd better hope that interest rates haven't gone up on you because they'll hit you hard. Okay, so how are we doing? Not bad. We burned through that very quickly. Not bad. Is it boring? But the seesaw makes it a little interesting. Okay, so here, and this, we showed this back in Chapter 5. Back in 1960, you see that this is the S&P 500, and this is the 10-year Treasury note, 10-year Treasury bond. They were pretty darn close to one another, right? The S&P was yielding dividends 3.8% or so. The Treasury bonds were paying 4.34%. And, of course, corporates were higher. And so throughout the 60s, the stock did really, really well. And you see the dividend going down because the price has gone up. And then what's going on to the bond yields? Well, inflation started to take hold in the late 60s and then way in the 70s. 70s inflation was a very difficult problem. And we also had Watergate and Vietnam and gas crises and disco. And it was a very difficult time. And so inflation, as Marco was saying, is a bondholder's nightmare, right? Because you're being paid back in dollars that are worth less. So inflation started to get hold, and what did bondholders say? Bondholders, you better pay me better interest rates or I ain't buying your bonds. So the 10-year Treasury note hit over 15%, and then President Jimmy Carter, I know it's hard to believe, but we had a president named Jimmy. Okay. He's still alive, by the way. He beat cancer at age 90-something. He was very upset. You know, he was the president. This is not good. And he nominated a gentleman by the name of Paul Volcker, who's actually still alive. He actually worked. He's a Republican, but he worked for Obama somewhat. And he's still kicking around. He nominated him to head the Federal Reserve Bank and said, Mr. Volcker, we have to do something about inflation. And Mr. Volcker said, Mr. President, we can. We can ratchet up short-term interest rates. It'll create a huge recession and might cost you the election in 1980. And to his credit, Mr. Carter said, that's not the main concern. The main concern is what we have to do for our economy and our country. And the Federal Reserve Bank started ratcheting up short-term interest rates to the point that the prime hit 22% there, just for a short period of time. It was just a few months. Mortgages were 17%. And I remember a woman who was from the the real estate industry saying, well, we'll never see 12% again. I'm thinking, okay, whatever you say, lady. I didn't know. I was a computer nerd. Of course, what are they now? 4.5 So it broke the back of inflation because now what do you see? What do you see? Do you see the bond? Bond yields coming down precipitously. And we saw that because of the stocks did not do well in the 70s, the yield going up and then starting to fall as stocks did really, really, really well. And so look at what happened now. In the year 2000, we talked about this in Chapter 5, the S&P 500 hit 1% dividend. And people said, blue skies, productivity gains, the Dow's going to 36,000, we're all going to get rich. And the internet bubble burst, and we see bonds continuing to fall until the year 2008, right? The Great Recession. What happened? The dividend yield went above the 10-year Treasury note. Now, people were scared to death. People were worried about the end of the world, and yet when that happens, it usually means stocks are going to rally. And sure enough, stocks did really, really well. And then it happened again in 2012. Stocks did really well in 2013. And look, it's happened again a couple of times. Right now, the 10-year Treasury note is down to around, it spiked a little bit. It was over 3%, but just for a short period of time. Now it's down to 2.5 again, 2.6. And the dividend yield is about 2%. So what does it mean for the future? I don't know. But I'm optimistic. If we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own ways. Cool? All right, so we burned through that really quickly. I apologize if we went too fast. But let's take a look now. Let's take a little time and take a look at what happened in the Great Recession. Now, I use these, examples within class. But for some reason, I just had this thought. You know what? Look, this isn't going to last. Everybody can see the spreadsheet? Hasn't seen the spreadsheet yet? Pass this around. Don't look, you. Don't look. If you haven't taken the exam yet. I wish I would have saved the General Motors quotes. Oh, I'm so bummed. The General Motors quotes were even worse. But a part of your assignment, I'm going to ask you to do some quotes. And here's a page that you can do quotes on. I'll show you that. Not now. But maybe not now. It turns out getting bond quotes is a lot harder. Free bond quotes is a lot harder than stock quotes. Plenty of places will give you pretty good stock quotes. Not too many places will give you good bond quotes. Fidelity, if you get a Fidelity account, they give you 60,000 bond quotes for free, but you got to have an account with them. So I was pretty impressed with that. But most, no. Why is that? Well, we're going to see some advertisements. We're going to see an advertisement fairly soon, actually. And you see, after they show you all this, it's a $25,000 minimum. Bond investors tend to have a lot of money. They tend to be very wealthy. Most of us working grunts are going to buy our bonds from mutual funds because the mutual fund managers have millions, billions of dollars to invest. But you walk into a bond house, a place that buys and sells bonds,
$1,000, can I buy one bond?
Get out of here. But that's not true for Treasury Direct. Remember Treasury Direct back in Chapter 1? Yeah? Your $1,000 is welcome, and you get the same price that the big boys and girls get on Wall Street. So that's pretty cool. Well, let's take a look at what happened to Ford. And go away. Thank you very much. Now, this was Yahoo, and Yahoo used to have a pretty good bond quote page. And it wasn't from them. It was from another company. And then it started to get really, something was not right. I actually, Value Bond, that was the name of the company. So I contacted Value Bond. And I said, do you realize that these quotes are not right? And they said, yeah, we've been telling Yahoo. This is part of Yahoo screwing up. Now, we said that bonds were selling, $1,000 par. But the quotes are as a percentage, to make it more difficult to understand. So what you have to, whenever you see a quote, you have to move the decimal place, one to the right. Is that easy? Can you do that? Okay, but why don't they just show you 580, I don't know, 640. What's going on here? This was in, Yeah, March of 2009, the bottom of the Great Recession, and people were selling their bonds, their Ford bonds, at a discount. Why? Because I don't know if you remember, but GM, Chrysler, Ford, they almost disappeared. In fact, you remember they went in front of Congress to beg? And they, the first time they went, they really made a bad choice. They took their private jets to Washington. And that got put on the news. So the next time they went to beg, they took a bus. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that. Okay. Idiots! Stupid! You take a private jet and then beg for money. So people were so frightened that they were dumping their bonds. They were just saying, I don't care what price you give. Give me any price. Give me any price. And so investors were saying, all right, I'll pay you 580. I'll pay you 640. Now look at these bonds. 7.7%. 9.98%. What if they don't mature? You're going to get 9.98% until the middle of the century. 7.7% until the next century. You're going to be dead. Maybe some of you won't. Who knows? Notice. Are they callable? No. Ford's on the hook to pay these things forever. They must have did these back in the 80s when interest rates were pretty high. But this is what we got to look at. At the end of this chapter, we'll take a look at these in general. When you join the benevolent machine, you get a credit score, and it's go anywhere from 350 to 850. Well, bonds are rated according to a couple of different scales, but this is the most popular scale. It's the one that Fitch and S&P, Standard & Poor's, and Moody's does things a little differently, but it's the same idea. AAA is the best, right? AA, triple B. Anything above, anything triple B or B, triple B or above is called investment grade. Anything below triple B is called non-investment grade. But what's the term that most people use? Anybody know? Remember from Business 121? Junk, right? Or distressed or speculative, but junk is the popular term. And so, where is Ford? There's no F, by the way. D means default. It's too late. Where is Ford? Triple C. It's, boom, 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 three notches below investment grade. So, in other words, the rating agencies are trying to tell you that this is dangerous. So you bought the bonds for 580, 640, 590 in March of 2009, the time of maximum pessimism. Cool? You had the conviction. How did it work out? Did Ford go under? Oh, by the way, we'll discuss yield. We'll come back to this. Yield to maturity, current yield. We'll come back to this in chapter 10. We do the calculations. How did it work out for you? Well, 6 months later, what's happened? Everybody get the spreadsheet? Get the spreadsheet? Okay. They're still rated at CCC, but what has happened to the prices? They're starting to firm, aren't they? People are still worried. This is October 2009. They're still worried about the end of the world, but investors are kind of saying, I don't know. So now they're selling for $918.80. There's the 9.97 bond. $765, $770. And notice that the current yield is going down. We'll discuss that later on. So now, what happens? June of 2010, notice some of them, not all of them, but some of them are now selling for more than $1,000. Don't forget that. That's not Ford. And what's happened? They've been notched up a grade. Are you with me? You understand what's going on? That? Yeah? Looking better for Ford. That was June 2010. Now if we go to October 2010, they're all selling for more than $1,000. They've been brought to double B. Still not investment grade, but now notice that the coupon yields are greater than the yield to maturity. Why? Because we have to pay more than $1,000. And we'll discuss the yield to maturity in detail later on. But you see what happened? You can now sell that bond for $540, $560 you bought. You can sell for $1,030 or $1,200. Okay, so now let's go to March of 2013. And this is about when interest rates bottomed out. They bounced along the bottom, but this is pretty much the bottom, March of 2013. Look at the prices, $1,447, $1,337, $1,400. And what's happened? Ford is now investment grade, and it's too late. You should have bought them when everybody else thought the world was going to end. And you should have seen the GM. They were selling for $80. Some of the GM, $80. These were bonds paying 80%. If they paid you interest 1 year, you got your whole money back. And then they had another, whatever, how many years to pay you, $80. So those people really made out. And let's skip over to, let's see what happened in April 2018. Now what happens, we can't use Yahoo anymore. And the prices have gone down a little bit. Yeah, interest rates have been drifting slowly upward. So you see, still some of them are 1,300, but not as many. Look at this one. This is one that they issued relatively recently because interest rates have come down. And now it's selling for a discount because interest rates have gone up a little bit on them. So they're selling for a discount. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Making sense? And now let's go to April 2019, just a couple of weeks ago. And still some of them are selling at a fairly high premium, but not like we saw just a few years ago where interest rates had bottomed out. Cool? All right, you want to see Poway? No way. I call it no way. This is the Poway. So that was a corporate bond. Now let's go take a look at a muni bond. This is a Poway school district. And this was February 2009, remember, in the depths of the Great Recession. And this was in the San Diego Useless Tribune. Yeah, Union Tribune, sorry. They were hawking the Capistrano, California Unified School District, Community Funding District Special Tax Bonds, and the Poway, California Unified School District, Community Funding District, I think that's what it stands for, Special Tax Bonds. Now, what's going on with these bonds? The school districts are entities unto themselves. They're separate from the cities and the county. They have their own taxing authority, but it's fairly limited. They have to go to the voters and say, hey, we're a Poway Unified School District, or we're Southwestern Community College. Voters of the South Bay, will you allow us to sell these bonds so we can upgrade the campus, so we can build a stadium and a new wellness center and all the other stuff that we're building? And the voters say, okay. Now, do you think they understand what they're doing? Do you think they understand that they're putting an assessment on property taxes in the South Bay so that Southwestern will be able to issue these bonds and pay back the interest and principal over 30 years? Few do, but most don't. Because every time we go to the polls, you'll see bond propositions. And people don't really know what's a bond, but the proposition, oh yeah, we want to build schools or the bullet train or water projects or whatever. You think people really understand what they're doing? They're essentially saying, yes, okay, you can go ahead and issue those bonds, and we taxpayers are going to pay for it over the next 20, 30, 40 years. People don't understand. I don't think they do. At least when I ask them, they go, huh? Okay, take my class. So, notice the coupon yield is 5%, but it's actually paying more. Why? What's it priced at? $893.66. Remember, move the decimal point over. Look at the minimum. Yeah, they go away. Go away, you bother me. I remember the governing board member was giving a speech when we were discussing the bond issue. And he's saying, we need to market this to the folks here in the South Bay so that they can invest in Southwestern College. And I'm going, no. No, mostly wealthy people buy muni bonds. Notice that this was 2009. Starting in 2015, September 1st, 2015, they are callable at par, callable at 1,000. So, and starting in 2015, Capistrano could say, okay, here's your $1,000 back, give us our bond back. They could do that. Doesn't mean they will, but they could. Now, look at the, and notice they're rated AA, right? They're, you know, very good investment grade. Poway, non-rated, 5.25%, but it's yielding 8.6%. Why? It's selling for $648.78. So investors were much more worried about Poway. Now, why would you worry about a school district? Well, where's the money coming from? It's coming from the property taxes. And I don't know if you remember, but were people paying their mortgages? Were they paying their property taxes? No, they were going through foreclosure. They were just saying, oh, hell, I'll stay here for a year or two before they kick me out. And meanwhile, I'm not paying my mortgages, and the property taxes are built into the mortgage for most people. So that's why investors were dumping Poway bonds. Oh, get rid of them. I don't care what's going to happen. I don't care how low. I bought them for $1,000, but I don't care. I'll sell them for $650. They started being, this was February 2009, so 6 months later, in September, they were callable at 1,030. So Poway would have to pay an extra $30 per bond to take them back. Cool? Make sense? Yeah? Okay. Maybe not. So what happened? Did Poway School District go under? What do you think?
No.
No. Spoiler, no, they didn't. Okay, so a year later, and of course, we have to go to FINRA to get our book. What's happened? What's happened to the prices? $650? Yeah, they're still non-rated, so what are we going to do? But the yields now have come down from 8.6 down to 5.96%. And then now let's go to October of 2010. Prices are creeping up even higher, not much higher. And then let's go to March of 2011. What happened? Now forget these guys. Prices went down. They were close to 900. Now they're 716, a little bit less. What happened? What happened is on 60 Minutes. If you watch 60 Minutes, it's a very popular show, a news magazine. Forget it, bad joke. I'll tell you later. This woman, Meredith Whitney is her name. Meredith Whitney. She's a very renowned bond analyst in the muni bond world, and she went on 60 Minutes and said, dozens, hundreds of municipalities across the country are going to go bankrupt. She was way off. A few did, you know, a handful went bankrupt. And so what did people do when they heard that on 60 Minutes? Sell, sell, sell the bonds! And the prices dropped, and then it turns out she was away, she was crying wolf, and back by 2011, October 2011, the prices had jumped back up again to 900, 980, 800, 880, and now where are we? March of 2012. Notice now, a couple of them, now those are the ones that are rated, but a couple of them are over 1,000, but they're close. Now, see, this is what you'll see sometimes. That ain't right. That's bad data. When you see something like that, that can't be right. And that's why getting prices on bonds can be a little tricky for those of us who don't have a lot of money and don't have a personal broker or don't have a Fidelity account. And now, October 2012, we see that many of them are selling at a premium over 1,000. Are you with me? Understand what's going on? Okay, good. And now, when was the 13 was? We'll skip over to March of 15. And now all of them. Oops. All of them are now selling for a large premium. And so, jump to April. Prices have come down a little bit. Well, actually a lot from a couple years ago. And prices have come down, but they're still all selling for more than 1,000. So what's the lesson? The time of maximum pessimism, when everybody else is running away and terrified, is the best time to buy. But it also takes the greatest courage. Okay, good. Now, let's do... look at the assignment. I'm going to ask you to do a search And so if you can find a better place, please tell me. All right, if you can find a better place, please tell me. But FINRA is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. That's the entity that oversees the brokerage accounts, the brokerage firms and the brokers. And you can go to FINRA's page and type my name in, see if there's any hanky-panky. At least not last time I checked. So their homepage is pretty cool, but we're going to take a look at their search page. So let's take a look at their search page. Now, it's a little tricky, not that tricky. It's very simple if you just want a corporate bond. So what do I ask you to do? Get a Home Depot bond? Is that what I ask you to do? Well, let's look at Ford. Anyway, type in Ford. But just don't be tricky. Don't type Ford Motor Corporation. Just type Ford or Home Depot or something like that. And that's pretty easy because notice the default is corporate bonds. Show results. And it says, okay, you've got to agree to. Yeah, I agree. And there's the bonds. But if you want to be more specific, you can do an advanced search and ask for all different criteria. For example, I only want A-rated bonds or A-rated bonds. I want bonds that mature between 2020 and 2030. So you can add all these little criteria if you want. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. If you want a muni bond, which is like Southwestern, you have to make sure you select the state, or you're going to get Southwestern Indiana somewhere. And then don't type Southwestern Community College. Just type Southwestern. Don't type anything else. Wait till you see how they abbreviate it. And you pick Southwestern, and here you go. Look at that. Look at how they abbreviated community. Community. But hey, we're not doing too bad. Double A rated. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, we're doing okay. And then a yield. It's a coupon yield of 5%. Matures. Oh, this one matures in a few months. And somebody now you have to pay $1,148.84. You're going to get 1.3%, 1.36% of your money. But there's Southwestern. So cool. Piece of cake. I'm going to ask you to do a few other things. All right. Cool. All right. Oops, what am I doing? So the assignment is actually fairly straightforward. We'll just talk about bond spreads in a little bit. But now, how are we doing for time? Bail. Do we want to continue? Wake up? Give me about 5 minutes, okay? Because now what we're going to do, we don't have time to go through the whole thing. We'll finish up on Thursday. But we're going to go from the least riskiest bonds to the riskiest bonds. And the least riskiest are, what happened to? Yeah, there you are. There you are. The least riskiest is the United States Treasury. Now, you would think the Treasury would be AAA rated, right? And for decades, it was AAA rated. Then, I'm not sure if you remember, but in August of 2011, the Republicans said, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that Obama is a one-term president. So they threatened to shut down the government over really stupid things. And we're not going to pay our Treasury notes, our Treasury bonds. And Standard & Poor's said, okay, we're going to lower you down to AA+, which means, you know, there's AA+, then AA, and AA-. We'll look at that later on. And so now, the Treasury is not AAA, which is outrageous. In fact, Warren Buffett said, that's ridiculous. The Treasury should be AAA. Is the United States going to pay its debts? Yes. Don't let anybody tell you differently. I don't care what right-wing goofball you listen to. The United States is going to pay its debts. And then we said, remember the 2-year to 10-year are notes, and greater than 10 years are bonds. I don't care. TIPS are becoming more and more popular. Actually, they were popular for a while there after the Great Recession when people were sure that the inflation was going to just skyrocket. Of course, it hasn't over the last 10 years. So Treasury inflation indexed obligations are protected against inflation. So people who are worried about buying bonds because of inflation can buy TIPS, and we'll see on the next slide how it works. you're protected against inflation. Not much, but you're protected. And then the agency bonds. You might have heard of Ginny Mae, Sally Mae, which they changed their name, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. These were entities that were spun off, sponsored by the United States Congress, who said, look, we want to make it easy for people to borrow money to go to school, college. We want to make it easy for people to borrow money to buy houses. So we're going to create these entities. Now, they are not direct obligations of the United States Treasury. And we, the United States taxpayers, will never, never backstop these entities. So you better make sure you understand that these are private companies. And if they go bankrupt, the United States taxpayer is not going to... What happened in the Great Recession? They went... yeah, they got bailed out by the United States taxpayer. And you, dear United States taxpayers, citizens of the glorious United States of Armenia, are now owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And by the way, they're actually making you a lot of money. Every 3 months, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac send billions of dollars to the Treasury. Now, in a market-based capitalist system, do we want the government involved in business? Normally, no. But nobody's been able to agree on how the hell we're going to extricate ourselves from these two entities. So right now, it's just the elephant in the room and the donkey in the room. Because neither side's going to agree on how we're going to do this. In other words, what's the old saying? You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater? The system has been working. It helps people get mortgages. How do we do it so that we're going to see. We'll see what happens. By the way, the states can't tax the feds. The feds can't tax the states. So these are exempt from state tax laws, state income taxes. So if you buy treasuries, California can't tax you on your interest. Now, here's how the TIPS work. A TIP is a Treasury Inflation Indexed Obligations. I ask you to take a little look at these back in Chapter 1, but go back to treasurydirect.gov if you're interested in it. These are a bond that provides protection against inflation. Why? How does it do that? They pay interest. They pay less interest than others. But every year, if there's inflation, the par value goes up. You see the value of your bond rise because of inflation. You still get your interest payments, but now the interest payments go up. What does the IRS say? Okay, you got to pay us tax on the interest, which you got to do anyway. Plus, you got to pay us tax on the value increase in the par value, even though you didn't get that in cash. So if it went from $1,000 to $1,010, you got to pay interest on that $10. How do you like that? Big jerks. And so what some people will do is they'll put them inside their IRAs, their Roth IRAs, their traditional IRAs. Do you pay taxes every year on your retirement account? No, so you don't care. It's just when you take the money out, if it's in a traditional IRA, then you pay taxes. If it's in a Roth, you don't pay any taxes. So these are very popular with people who are terrified of inflation. They don't pay that well. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Where am I? Now, how are we doing for time? Okay, now let's take a look. Okay, then we're going to do mortgage and the municipal meeting. But let's now take a look at Vail. All right, who wants to look at Vail? So that was because we're selling. You guys, you missed out. You weren't here on time. We're going to sell. Who are we selling? Boeing? Oh, the canopy. Yeah, where is Carlos? He's not here. We're selling the marijuana already. Okay, and the suggestion is that we look at Vail Mountain. Vail, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Vail, but it's absolutely beautiful. What was the ticker symbol? Mountain, which is great. And so this is a corporation, Vail Resorts. Tell us, what do you know about them?
It's not just like Vail skiers.
I was going to say, they probably have several.
Skiers all over the place. Mm-hmm. Mostly Colorado, they have them in Canada. They have like a ton of Lake Tahoe, too.
Are they in Banff? I love that name. Wouldn't you like to go to Banff? Just so you can spit at your friends when you say, I'm going to Banff. Banff.
Lake Louise.
Okay. So Vail Resorts, through its subsidiaries, operates mountain resorts and urban ski areas in the United States. Three segments, mountain lodging and real estate, Vail, Breckenridge, Keystone, Beaver Creek, Park City. They own Park City. I think that's probably even more profitable than Vail. Heavenly Mountain, because that's more popular, right? Vail is very exclusive. Park City is much more popular. Kirkland, Lake Tahoe, Whistler. So there's Banff. That's Canada. Stowe Resort, Australia. Wisconsin. Do they say they do cross-country skiing there? Various winter and summer recreation segment, lodging segment, real estate, owns, develops, sells real estate properties. Does this look promising? So what was the was paying over 3%? 3.19%? We said that the one-year target, we don't have a value line at our disposal, but here's what I like to do. Let's go to historical data. And notice that you can say, okay, give it to me for everything you got. Give me everything you got. And I'm going to not just look at the prices. I want to look at the dividends. I love dividends. So what happens here? Look at what they've been doing with their dividends. You see? You see a rising dividend? And if we can do this is what we did in Chapter 6 in the... I asked you to use the value line, which is, I trust it more than I trust Yahoo. But I ask you to go and see how fast they're raising your dividend. Now, we can do that calculation now. We don't have time. But it looks like they're raising their dividend quite substantially. I mean, this is a huge raise. From $1.05 to $1.47, I like this company. Let's look. All right, so what do you think? I'm going to write that down. I'm going to look up value line. But we're not going to wait. We're going to ask you right now. Okay, folks, how many people want to buy Vail Resorts? That's almost unanimous. Okay, that's what we're going to do. And we'll see what value line has to say about them. Cool. Okay, what a deal. All right, good. All right, any questions, any thoughts, any ideas? Are bonds boring? Yeah. The truth is, I really should have more bonds than I do because of my age. The old saying is you should have how much, your percentage of your portfolio. We're going to get to Chapter 11 where we tie everything together. But the old saying was, whatever your age is, you should have that in bonds. Or another way to look at it is you take 100, get rid of this guy. You take 100 and then you subtract your age. And that should be in stocks. So say you're 40 years old. Right, you subtract that from, you subtract 40 from 100, and you get 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Now, what's wrong with this? This was at a time when people just didn't live as long as they are now. You know, for example, somebody 60 years old should have 40% in stocks, 60% in bonds. But this is at a time when people, you know, they retired at 62, they died at 64. Or they didn't make it. They wanted to retire at 65. They didn't make it, especially guys who smoked cigarettes. So what you see people doing now is they've increased this to 110 or 120. In other words, saying, you know, up the amount of stocks because you have 120 minus your age, 120 minus 40, 80% stocks, 20% bonds. I think this is poppycock. Personally, everyone's different. But if you are well-armed with the knowledge that if the world ends, it doesn't matter where your money is, and are not going to panic when the markets fall, you young folks, you should have 100% in stocks. You shouldn't have any bonds. Now, other people are going to say Payan is way too aggressive. But I'm not aggressive. You know that. I like very strong companies that have been around for decades. I mean, Vail, how long have they been in business? Probably for decades, right? Yeah, they've been around for decades. So companies like that paying consistently, raising dividends. And so, and here's the key, folks. If you think about bonds, stocks have to do better than bonds. In the short term, no. You never know what's going to happen. You know, bonds, there have been times when bonds have beaten stocks over 10 years. 2000 to 2009, the decade of the 2000s, bonds handily beat stocks. But over the long term, stocks have to do better. Why? Why is that? Well, remember bonds are, we don't work it up on the screen, up on the board. Bonds are paid from corporate earnings, corporate bonds, municipal tax revenues, muni bonds, and then the Treasury, the United States taxes. Well, if the corporations are not doing well enough to pay their bond interest and to pay back the principals, that means the economy has fallen into a bucket of poop. What's going to happen to stocks? They're going to get devastated. But eventually the bonds are all going to fall. If people are not paying their taxes because they're not earning anything, or they're running out of whatever they had to pay their bills, are the munis going to be able to pay their interest payments? And the last bastion, if the income is not coming in to pay the from the taxes, the Treasury, what's going to happen to the Treasury bonds? So this is often called Armageddon, right? The end of the world. What was the one? There was a joke about that. I don't know why you have to worry about what Armageddon means, because it's not like it's the end of the world. Are you with me? Understand? Stocks have to do well over the long term for the bonds to actually get repaid, to get paid. Or if the whole thing falls apart, in which case, get out of the Northern Hemisphere, learn to raise goats, and good luck. Okay, so we'll finish up the types of bonds, and on Thursday, we'll get to bond calculations. And we'll find that, yes, indeed, bonds are actually pretty boring. Well done. All right, now, who owes me something? Okay, Yang owes me. Matthew, did you already give it to you? You already give it to me? Okay, Ram, you want to see the spreadsheet? Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, and then Kathleen. Okay. You didn't get to chapter 7 or chapter 9? I'm sorry. Okay. Who didn't get chapter 9 handout? Oh, Nicholas, I'm sorry. Okay.